All right, good morning. Good morning. Now, the passage that we just read, that's the text that we are going to study today. And whatever I'm going to do in the next 25 minutes, I'm going to bring us together to the table and to take communion together. That's where we're going, okay? And that's what I'm doing every time, to be honest. But to get us to there, let's review a little bit. What we talked about last time, which was the heart of the book of Philippians, we talked about the Christ hymn. It was a hymn recorded in verses 5 to 11 of the chapter that we're reading. It was one of the most famous passages in the Bible, and it sings about the storyline of Jesus, the story arc of Jesus, how he didn't use his power to take and grasp, to rise up, and to gain glory for himself. He didn't do that. Instead, he emptied himself. He poured out himself for other people. He humbled himself, took a slave's posture, and gave up his life so that other people can have life. And because he gave up himself, God raised him up to glory, to the uttermost. And this life that Jesus lived, it was an example for other human beings. This is how humans are supposed to live. This is how humans are created to live. This is the only way humans can be truly, gloriously happy, because this way of self-emptying, this reflects who God is. Right? That's what we talked about last time. We said that God is inherently a self-giving being. Right? So when we live like that, when we give away ourselves for others, when we live like that, we are most like him. So we are most ourselves. That is when we can feel most at home in our identity. Right? Let me say that again. Because God is a self-giving being, and he created us to be like him. So when we live like that, when we live like Christ, when we give up ourselves, we are most like him, so we are most like our factory setting, if you will. And that's when we are most happy. That's when we can receive true glory from God. Right? That's our review. That's what we talked about last time. So this is the heart of this book. So everything else that comes later in this book will, in one way or another, be dependent on this idea, this self-emptying way of life. Now, so let's take a look at our passage today. The main command Paul gives to the church is found in verse 12. It is to work out your own salvation. That's the main command. And if you've been in churches for many years, this is not a unheard of command, right? We hear this a lot. Work out your own salvations. But I will point out right away that this is not a call for individual Christians. There's this word own, right? So it sounds individualistic, like you be responsible for your own salvation. But that's not what it's talking about. It is talking about a corporate salvation that the church is supposed to live out. This own word, it's not talking about individual Christians. It's more like Paul talking to the Philippian church, like, hey, I'm not there with you. That's okay, but you guys work out your own salvation. It's still a corporate sense of working out the salvation. Because, you know, if you remember the context, it's talking about unity, right? It's talking about the unity of the church. So Paul is telling them, hey, you take care of your own church and work out your own salvation there. Okay, so that work is what we're going to focus on. The corporate Christian work that Paul calls the Philippian church to focus on. And that's also the work that we as a church are supposed to focus on. Now, we're going to spend much time dissecting and discussing what that work is. But we already know that whatever that work is, the Christ hymn would be the key for us to do that work well, right? We already know that. Okay, so just keep that in mind. Now, let me go through biblical history and flesh out that work for us with other imageries in the Bible, okay? It feels like I do that a lot, but and you're going to hear the same stories over and over, but hopefully through different perspectives. Okay, so let's think about the gospel work that Paul talks about here. Now, I will go through biblical history, but I will also rely on a few hints that appear in verses 12 to 16 in our passage. Okay, because in verses 12 to 16, Paul scatters a few key verses in there to call us back to Old Testament stories, to flesh out for us what that work is. Okay, so when I tell you the background story, I will point out some of the key words in this passage to show you how we're actually following Paul's flow of thought. Now, think about the first work in the Bible for humans. The very first work for humans to take. It was in the Garden of Eden, right? The Garden of Eden. Now, at first, God created the world by his words. The word of life. Oh, that shows up in our passage. The word of life. God spoke the world into being. And through his words, things came alive. So God opened up a garden by his word of life, this Eden. And he particularly displayed his goodness and beauty in that garden. And he planned to use that garden to glorify himself. Right? We talked about glory last time. He displayed his goodness and beauty, and he planned to use whatever he created to glorify himself. That's why God created the world. Now, in that garden, he put Adam in charge. He put Adam there to continue to make the garden more beautiful and glorious. And Adam was supposed to be fruitful and multiply, right? To expand the scope of that work, to expand and multiply God's glory in that garden so that he would make the garden shine as light in the world for all to see, to multiply God's glory in the world. And in that garden, humans are supposed to be in a loving fellowship with God and with other people. They are supposed to live as children of God. Remember in Genesis, Adam was called the son of God, right? They were not slaves of God, right? Working for God in that garden. Oh, so poor, you know, they're enslaved by God. No, they are children of God. They are living in the household of God, enjoying all the goodness of God in that garden. So in that garden, if Adam worked well in that garden, they were enjoying the blessings from the Father as his children. And all this, the glorious garden, brings glory to God. That was the original plan. And notice that for this to work, Adam must submit under God's authority, as children submit to their parents. But Adam rebelled, right? Adam rebelled. He didn't want to stay under God's authority. He wanted to be his own boss. He took that fruit and be like, I could be my own wisdom. And in response, God kicked humanity out of the garden, outside of his provision, his protection, and all kinds of blessings. So humanity was cursed because they were outside of God's blessing, outside of the garden. Okay, but then God is not done. He's not given up on his plan to glorify himself with a beautiful garden. Okay, this is how I'm gonna describe creation. Okay, creation is God planning to glorify himself with a beautiful garden. That's what creation is. So he's not given up on that plan. So later, among all the people who were drowning in curses, he called Israel. He called them to do what? To reopen a new garden, an Eden-like garden. Again, to fulfill his plan, to glorify himself with a beautiful garden. So he saved Israel from slavery in Egypt, right? Israel was in slavery, so he saved them to a new garden, to a land of Canaan, right? So that new garden now is in Canaan. So let's think about the phrase here, work out your own salvation. What does it mean for Israel to work out their own salvation? Their salvation was being saved from Egypt, right? But it's not just the salvation, it's not just for the salvation's sake, it's for the garden's sake. So to work out their own salvation means to not only just be saved, but enter into that garden, take good care of it, to fulfill the purpose for which they were saved from Egypt. Okay, again, to work out their own salvation for Israel means to take good care of the land of Canaan, to enjoy whatever God provided them here, there, and glorify God in that garden. Now, I'm gonna point to some of the key phrases here, okay? Now, the way God opened up this new garden this time, he also used his word of life. How did he do that? He brought people to Mount Sinai, right? And he showed up to them and gave them his law, the word of life, teaching them how to behave as his children. This is how you could behave as my children in the land of Canaan if you follow this law. Now, a holy God showed up to a bunch of sinners at Mount Sinai, so people were trembling. People were afraid. So they met God with fear and trembling. This phrase was to call people back to the mount, to the scene at Mount Sinai. They were fearing and they were trembling, and at once all Israel vowed, like, yes, we will follow your law, we will obey you, we will be your children, we will go to the land of Canaan, we will make that place great, and we will shine as lights for all the nations to see, calling people to come worship you with us. That's what Israel vowed to do at Mount Sinai. But soon after they received the law, what did they do? Another key phrase here, they were grumbling and disputing. Grumbling and disputing. This is an iconic phrase in the Old Testament. That describes the Israel generation, the first generation. They grumbled against God. Right? Many of them, if you remember the story, many of them wanted to go back to Egypt. They were like, this is too hard. I don't want your plan. I don't like your plan. I don't want to work on my salvation. I'd rather go back to slavery. I wish you didn't save me. That sort of thing. They were grumbling against God's plan. They thought they knew how to pursue their happiness better than God did. Not only that, they disputed against Moses. They were disputing among themselves. If you remember the story, a large portion of it was many Israelites rose up and be like, why is Moses above us? Aren't we all special people of God? What makes him so great? Right? I could rise up and be great as well. Right? So they were disputing against Moses. They wanted to rise up, take and grasp glory for themselves. Right? Does that sound familiar? Right? That's what we talked about last week. That's the Roman way of thing. So from the get-go, they failed to live like the children of God. And in response, here's another iconic phrase God used in the Old Testament. God called them the crooked and twisted generation. If you read the Old Testament, this shows up so many times. They were the crooked and twisted generation. And God banished them from the land of Canaan. So, two gardens that failed. Let's make it clear, why did they fail? Because they didn't have the Christ hymn in them, right? They grumbled. They didn't submit under God's plan as Christ did. Christ submitted under God's plan until he reached the cross. He submitted all the way through. But Israel didn't. They grumbled. And they disputed, right? They didn't lower their posture before other people to serve them in order to serve God as Christ did. Christ humbled himself to serve other people. Israel followed the Roman way, taking and grasping things for themselves, thinking that they know how to gain glory and gain happiness better than God's plan. So they failed. Now, after Israel's failure, God's not done, right? He's not done. He's not going to be stopped by human sinfulness. So he once again opened up a new garden to fulfill his plan of creation, to glorify himself, to call a group of people to enjoy his garden. And this time, He also used his word to make that garden appear, to make that garden alive. But he didn't just use his words as instructions for people to follow. This time, he sent the word, okay? The word to create the new garden. He sent his son, the word of life. He sent Jesus, the word, into the world. And that word gave up his life as a seed dying in the ground to create a new garden. And this time, he calls all humanity to join him in this gardening project. Whoever will come, if they accept Jesus, they would be able to join the garden and to work for Jesus in his garden. And for those who want in, again, they don't just receive words of instruction. They actually get the word himself. They get the Spirit in them, empowering them to live like the children of God. Right? So they would have God working in them so that they could actually live as children of God. They would have the will, the desire, and the power to carry out the gardening work. That's what's different for this last garden. And obviously, this last garden does not consist of flowers or trees, right? This new garden consists of Christians. This new garden is the Church of Jesus. And as before, this garden was created where everyone loves God and loves other people, and they are producing the fruit of the Spirit, right? I mean, the fruit of the Spirit is still carrying the imagery of gardening, right? This imagery permeates throughout the Bible. So this garden is supposed to produce the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, and all that. These fruits are to be enjoyed by the people who are working in the garden, and these fruits should bring glory to Jesus, who owns the garden. Now, I'm just going to point out one thing, okay? If you trace these things, like throughout church history or throughout world history, you would notice that a lovely church community, it is not just a good thing to have in life, okay? It's not like, oh, the main thing in my life is to find a good job, take care of my family, make some money, and have a good life. And if I have a good church community to support me, that's great, right? Church is not a side quest. If you look at world history, according to the Bible, this is the center of the universe. This is the center of God's attention in his creation. So it shouldn't be a side quest for us Christians. It's the main goal for God in history. So that should be the main task for us. That's what we live for. This is I'll put it in the theological terms, okay? This is the epicenter of God's plan to glorify himself. And this is where he designed us to find satisfaction as human beings, okay? Now, I'm done with my introduction. Just kidding. But this is the framework we need to understand our passage. Let's look at our Bibles and let's quickly walk through our passage today. Now, hopefully it'll make much more sense to you in this passage. Now, verses 12 and 13, this is a main command, right? Paul tells the Philippian church, hey, you've been saved for this new garden, so work out your own salvation. Make that garden great in Philippi. That's what matters in your life. That's the most important thing. Trust that when this garden flourishes, when this garden gets to flourish by your work, it brings honor to Christ and it brings joy to you. That's what matters the most. And verse 17, Paul says, like 17 and 18, they're kind of hard to understand, but here's basically what it means. Paul is like, as for me, whether I'm with you or not, that's not as important, okay? What matters is that your gardening project is doing well. That's the main thing. So your gardening project is like It's like the main sacrifice. It's like the main sacrifice offered up in ancient worship. Back in the days, whenever they go for worship, they would offer up a main sacrifice, a piece of meat. And they would sometimes pour wine on top of it as a complimentary, decorative, ceremonial pouring out of the wine. So Paul is saying, your church work, your gardening project, that's the main piece of meat. That's the main sacrifice. If I die, I would be like the drink offering poured out on top. That's not the main thing. That's not as important. So as long as your church is doing well, as long as the main sacrifice is taken care of, even if I die, I'll just be worshiping with you. It'll be good. It'll be great. We will be worshiping God rightly. So let's all rejoice, whether I'm there or not. That's what verses 17 and 18 are saying. Now let's come back to verse 14. If you are to take care of that main sacrifice, if you are to take care of that garden, what you're not supposed to do is to be like the Israelites before, right? Don't grumble against God's plan. Don't think for one second you know better than God how to make yourselves happy. And don't dispute among yourselves and seek to elevate yourselves over others as those people did back then. Don't be like the crooked and twisted generation of the past or the crooked and twisted generation of the Roman world. Instead, hold fast to the word of life. Hold fast to Christ and the way of life in the Christ Him. That's how you can live as the true children of God, without blemish, and shine as lights in the world, guiding people to come to Jesus for life. And then later, there's a long section talking about two people, talking about Timothy and Epaphroditus. Now, it's a long name, it's a weird name, Epaphroditus. It sounds like somebody has an infection in the leg or something, Epaphroditus. So why did Paul talk about these two people and the travel plans and all that? Well, Paul was like, let me point out two people to you who embody the Christ Him. They are your examples. That's why Paul talked about these two people. Verse 19 and to 23, Paul says, I'm sending Timothy to you. When he gets to you, receive him. Why? Because, verse 20, he has the Christ Him in him. He genuinely cares for your welfare, not just his own. And verse 21, he's intentional in serving the interest of Christ, not just his own interest. So he is aware of his role in the garden of Christ. He's a star gardener, a rare find. So receive him well. Also, verse 25, Epaphroditus, receive him back well and honor him. Why? Because Epaphroditus embodied the Christ Him as well by risking his own life to bring provision from Philippi to Rome. Now, Epaphroditus was the messenger sent by the Philippian church to Rome to take care of Paul in prison. And apparently he got sick in Rome and almost died. See, back in the days, traveling to another city involved serious risk. Shipwreck rate was quite high. Robbery was rampant, and diseases were less curable. So when the Philippian church decided to bring money to Paul, the people in the church wouldn't be like, hey, pick me, I want to go, I need a vacation in Rome anyway, right? They wouldn't be like that because it was very serious. Could you imagine like bringing a large sum of money, traveling to Rome on the road where there would be robbers along the way? That was serious business. And Epaphroditus did that. And sure enough, he got sick. It was common for travelers to get sick. You know, the bacterial flora in different cities would be different, right? So the immune system couldn't catch up, all that, right? So, but he was spending a lot of time in prison. There were many transmitted diseases there. Whatever the case may be, he got sick and he almost died. So Epaphroditus risked his life to do the gospel work by taking care of Paul. That's the work of a star gardener. So Paul wanted the church to give honor to him. So yes, it sounds like Paul is just announcing travel plans, but behind these announcements, he's actually teaching people how to work out their own salvation. It is by living out the Christ Him toward one another. Now, to wrap up, I will circle back to verses 12 and 13. These two verses contain so many different things that could take us hours to unpack, but I'll point out four different things. Well, the main thing would be the main command, to work out our own salvation. That's also God's command for us, for our church. We trust that this church community is the place for us to work hard at, to glorify God, and to find satisfaction. A deep human longing is met in the community where God is. That's how God designed the world to be. And we don't do this work by our strength alone. In verse 13, it says, it is God who works in us. Okay, so it is not just knowing the rules and enforcing the rules onto ourselves by our own strength. It's like, oh, it says do not grumble, so let's just hush hush over whatever complaints we had. It's not like that, okay? This work is working out what God has already worked in us. Right? God has done a work in us, and our job is just to work that out. God has already put the desire to take care of the garden in us. God has already given us the potential energy to take care of this garden. So it's already in us. If we pay attention to it, we can work it out and make it work. It's different. We're different from the Israelites. Israelites didn't have what we have in us. Israelites didn't have God working in them. But we do. So when we pay attention to be Christ to other people, that's God working in us. If we shift our focus on it, God will propel us to make the garden flourish. So unlike the Israelites, we actually have a sure shot to make it work. And it sounds like it's up to us to make it work, to work it out. We do have the agency to work it out. Verse 12 also says that we are to work with fear and trembling. Again, this is to call us back to the scene at Mount Sinai. But we don't have to be afraid like the Israelites were, like because Jesus cleansed our sins. So we're not standing before God as sinners waiting for judgment or punishment. We don't have to fear punishment. But that sense of fear and trembling is still fitting for us in the sense that we should know that the gardening work is what God cares about the most. That's God's highest calling for us. We should not be willy-nilly about it. We should not treat it as a side quest, as, it's good to have, but it's not necessary, that type of idea. We should realize that we are working for God in His presence on the project that He cares about the most. So let's not be flippant about it. That's what fearing and trembling is saying to us. But at the same time, that sense of awe or carefulness in God's presence doesn't have to be all scary, because it also says over here that all this work is for God's pleasure. We are working in God's presence, yes, but it's a happy presence. We're working with and for a happy God. Now, this phrase, it says that we are working, God is working in us according or for His good pleasure. It means that this whole gardening project is according or for God's good pleasure. It means that it's from a happy place that God works in us and supplies us with His power for His work. So we could think of Him as a happy master gardener, a happy owner of the garden. He's not a mean boss just waiting for us to work toward His satisfaction, and then He'll become happy. And then our days would be better because we, now that finally our boss is happy. He's not like that, okay? He is a happy boss from the get-go. He is eager to recruit workers to join His happy garden, okay? It makes Him happy that we will recognize the goodness and beauty of His garden. It makes Him happy that we would understand that we can only find glory and happiness in His garden. So we choose to commit to work for Him. And it would be His delight that now that we've joined His garden, it would be His delight to supply His power for us to work for His glory and for our own life, for our own enjoyment. That's who we have as a God. So if we recognize that this new garden of Jesus, this Christian community, is the Garden of Eden that we're supposed to take care of, it is where we find satisfaction and where we can glorify Jesus. So let's do the gardening work, pay attention to it, cultivate the fruit of the Spirit among ourselves, and get rid of the weed in the garden, right? The grumbling and the disputing. Let's do this with a sense of fear and trembling, giving the task the gravity it deserves, but also know that this is a happy workplace, okay? Because we have a happy boss. That's the garden that we're supposed to take care of. Now, as we continue to seek to work out our own salvation as a church, let's once again remember the founder and perfecter of our gardening work, Jesus. Okay? Because remember, when we first joined the garden, we didn't come to this garden bringing gifts to buy our way in. Right? We came empty-handed. We came empty-handed to enjoy the fullness of life in the garden. And Jesus died to open the gates for us so that we could enter his garden to have life. His blood is what waters this place to give growth to the plants in the garden. Jesus died so that this garden is possible. So let's once again come to the communion table and let's remember him. And let's remember our work as his gardeners. Let's come forward and let's take communion to end.